Malloy program. Brad Friedman sitting in for Mike tonight. I am your friendly and humble citizen, investigative journalist, blogger, troublemaker, muckraker in all week for Mike Malloy. And I was, I'll try to get this this other shot. I just tweeted, I was up on the roof here at the Clear Channel building in Burbank from where we are broadcasting. I took a shot of the clouds rolling over the Hollywood Hills, the hills where the Hollywood sign would otherwise be were it not for the clouds. And I twit-picked it over to, if you're following me on Twitter, if you're not, why not? You can follow me at The Brad Blog. That's my Twitter name, and I put a shot up of those hills. And I'll also try to, in the next break, I'll toss one up from the NBC building, which is right out our studio window here where they shoot the Tonight Show, which I will not be on tonight for some reason. I don't understand it. Okay, coming up very shortly, we're going to have David Roberts, a man with a very trustworthy beard from the from grist.org, who reports on clean energy, climate legislation, and so forth. He will explain why it is that the cap-and-trade scheme is such a scam, and how Al Gore is really trying to steal your money. So if you have any questions about that, if you're skeptical about cap and trade, because I saw on Fox News that it's an evil scam, give us a call. You can get in now at 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. I think that David Roberts is in favor of it. So give us a call and be skeptical. We like skepticism. And to that end, finishing up our last hour here, we had Dean Logan, the registrar, recorder, county clerk from Los Angeles County, explaining why it was that two primaries in a row now going. I have been unable to cast a vote on the electronic voting system out here in L.A. It continues to fail. It prints out, in the first instance, 4 out of 12 of my votes incorrectly. And mind you, this is a system made for blind people, essentially, the one that I was using, the audio ballot system. But I'm not blind. So I was able to notice that 4 out of 12 of my votes had been printed by the e-voting system incorrectly. A blind voter may not have noticed. Yet, to that end, I've got a caller that I want to get to here on that topic. Tim from Detroit calls us and has a question on that topic. Tim, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Well, hi, Brad, and I do want to, you know, kind of address a question or sort of a comment.
Yeah.
I've lost my sight for several years, and I can only perceive a light.
Mm-hmm.
So the last several elections that I've voted, I've actually gone absentee because I do not trust the e-voting systems. My district has them. And the whole history of these machines, I mean, they're very inaccurate. Whenever any independent analysts look at these machines, I mean, they can be hacked. The votes come out inaccurately.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the NFB basically got bought off by Bob Ney and his crowd back in the early 2000s.
That's the National Federation for the Blind, for those folks who don't know. Yeah, they got bought off, and National Federation for the Blind received $1 million from Diebold
right.
at exactly that time that they were pushing out these crappy machines to all of America. And, Tim, they used folks like you.
Yes.
If you were against electronic voting, it was because you hated blind people. And now they're doing the same thing. You know that. And, well, and I want to let the listeners know, they're doing the same thing right now with internet voting. As insane as e-voting is, now they want to push it to the internet. They're using our troops as guinea pigs. And if you're against internet voting, oh, it's because you hate the troops. Same scam.
Well, this goes to our democratic system, too, because, okay, just to take it down to a personal level, I mean, the very fact is, now that I do vote, I use an absentee system, but and I trust. I mean, it boils down to trust once again. I mean, I have to trust someone there to actually, you know, help me fill out the ballot.
Right.
And while I thank that person that I have helped me is trustworthy, I can't know for sure, right? And the problem is, can't we develop some sort of a system that the blind people can also use? I mean, I was thinking, for example, if the government could fund some sort of a Braille voting system, and therefore other people who could read Braille could verify if these votes in fact were accurate.
Well, in fact, there are tactile voting systems made for the disabled, and the e-voting industry and election officials have essentially shut them out. Out here in California, they wouldn't even allow a system that was put forward for certification. Mind you, certification is very, very, very expensive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these tactile systems, which are paper and let you feel the system, you know, who you're voting for and so forth, they don't cost a lot of money. So you don't have a Diebold or an ESNS to have, you know, $110,000 to go through certification testing.
Well, plus, my feeling is, I mean, let's just make it a purely publicly funded thing. I mean, don't listen to the Republicans. I mean, they're against government.
Yeah.
The Democrats should put that through Congress. This should be completely funded federally, and every state should be mandated to have it. I mean, this is completely unjust where, I mean, not just blind people, but all people's votes are held hostage by these private companies. It's a complete scam, and our democracy is in great danger now with this.
It is, and Tim, I do appreciate your call. I got to move on here, but I do appreciate your call because, early on in this whole battle, when you had the National Federation for the Blind, and by the way, you still have it now. You have this jerk, Jim Dixon, who basically threatens to sue everybody's pants off. He goes into Congress, he goes to these Democrats, he scares the crap out of them, says, if you don't do this or that, I will sue you, and, oh, I'm blind, I don't want a paper trail, or I'll sue you.
He's a very cynical man. The organization has become really bought off now by a lot of these corporate interests. They're doing a disservice to blind people. They really are.
Yeah, they sure as hell are. And frankly, they used blind people. And so when it came up, you know, and I saw this, and legislators will still tell you today, oh, well, we have to have these systems because blind people need them. But, you know, I spoke with blind folks early on, and they said, hey, I may be blind, but I'm not stupid. I would like there to be a record of how to vote.
Well, plus voting is, of course, a right in the Constitution, no matter what the Supreme Court says.
Is it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's not in the language, but I mean, I go back to the words "we the people." I mean, how are we to express ourselves if not by voting, right?
It makes sense to me. There is not, unfortunately, a constitutional right to vote. That needs to change, and those who would keep you from voting ought to be thrown in jail. It ought to be a felony to keep anybody from voting, to cage voters off the rolls, to suppress the vote. Anyway, Tim, I do appreciate your call, and thank you for being so well informed on this. Bless you, sir, and I would like you to vote independently and privately, but I want everybody's vote to be counted and countable before, during, and after an election, seems to me.
We need to push the Democrats on this. I mean, this whole South Carolina thing. I mean, I couldn't believe what happened.
Yep.
I mean, this guy totally unknown. And you know what? What's problematic is there have been some talk show hosts on this network, and I mean, I can name names who sat there and acted like these voters in South Carolina somehow voluntarily voted for this guy who they didn't know. The guy has a lot of issues. He has felonies and so on. He has no job. And yet the Democrat, the primary voters down there just voted for him spontaneously?
Yeah, that's it. They just all of a sudden voted for a guy they'd never heard of, and he got 60% of the vote. Insane! No, but don't look at the machines. They're not the droids you're looking for. Thanks, Tim. I got to run.
You bet.
All right, brother. It's absolutely insane. A question from the bradblog.com chat room. My computer has finally rebooted, and I'm able to get in there. Some fella had asked, that's his chat name, some fella, does Brad believe in dispensing with machines altogether? I assume he means machines on the for voting. It's not about the machines. It's about concealed vote counting. It's about secret vote counting. It's about being able to go to an election after it's done, if you have any question about it, and I mean any citizen, not a computer scientist, but any citizen can go look at their vote, at the ballots, and determine that, and know that they're looking at the voter intent, and know that the vote, that the election was counted accurately as per the voter's intent. That's all I ask. If you could do it with a machine and lasers, if you need a bionic man to do it, fine. As long as it's 100% transparent and every citizen can know that their democracy has been accurately recorded. That's what matters here. Do you understand? It's not about any particular system. It's about citizen oversight. If we are going to have a government that is about we the people, if we are going to have self-governance, then we need to be able to govern. to oversee our government. Not proprietary computers from private corporations, and not even open source voting systems that we don't know if the computer code used today was the same one we examined yesterday. It's madness. People, here's the deal. I got to go to a break. But in 15 seconds, let me tell you my system. You vote on a piece of paper, you put it in a clear, translucent box, you keep it on the table all day. At the end of the polls, you take it out, you open it, you count it with your eyeballs, with everybody watching, all parties, video cameras rolling, you post the results at the precinct before the ballots move anywhere. It ain't rocket science, people. Brad, in for Malloy, Dave Roberts next. Yeah, I got women on my mind. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy program. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com in for Mike Malloy. I'm also of the Green News Report for those folks who received that fine 6 minutes of Green News politics analysis and snarky comment, along with my co-host, Desi Doyen. You can listen to that at greennews.bradblog.com. And on that beat, one of the important things that we cover, of course, is climate change and clean energy legislation that continues to slog its way, sort of, kind of, through Congress, not coming nearly as fast as that gusher in the Gulf. And you would think, with that gusher in the Gulf, that climate change legislation would be front and center by every damn Democrat in Congress and in the White House 24/7 at this point, since I've argued they will never have a better backdrop for pushing for clean energy legislation, in my opinion. To that end, we're joined now by David Roberts, or as we like to say, paging Dr. Grist. That's, hey, Dave. Dr. Grist, Dr. Grist is his Twitter name. And if you follow him on Twitter, you may know the inside joke about his trustworthy beard. But more importantly, David Roberts is a staff writer for Grist.org. Focusing on politics, climate, and energy, he has contributed to or been featured in the New York Times, Boston Globe, Fast Company, Huffington Post, Outside Magazine, and Wired. Has appeared as a guest on the Fox Network's Hannity and Combs, as well as the Weather Channel's weekly environmental news show, The Climate Code. He joins us tonight to explain Al Gore's scam that is cap and trade. Hey, David, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hey, Brad, how's it going?
Actually, welcome back, I should say.
Yes, that's right.
You joined me, boy, it was a day or two after the explosion of the Deepwater Horizon rig out there in the Gulf before I think we all fully understood just how terrible a disaster we were looking at.
Seems like a long time ago.
It does, doesn't it? And it hasn't stopped, and it's unbelievable. And I think we talked about, we may have talked about it back then, that, you know, this seemed like the perfect opportunity for Democrats to make their case to finally get this bill passed in the Senate. It's been lingering. It's already passed in the House, but the Senate is still the holdup. So before we get to the politics of where this legislation stands, David Roberts, can we talk, can you explain in human being language what is cap and trade? Because I think a lot of people hear that, and there's a lot of disinformation going on out there. So can you explain it the way a human could possibly understand it?
Well, I can certainly attempt such a feat.
Good luck to you.
I mean, you need to keep the two parts distinct. The first part is the cap, and that's, from an environmental point of view, the important part, which is to say we want to cap the amount of greenhouse gas emissions in the total U.S. economy and then slowly ratchet that cap down. That's the environmental piece.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is to reduce emissions by 80% from 2005 levels by 2050. That's what's in most of the bills in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
When you cap that amount of greenhouse gases allowed, you break that amount up into chunks, and those are called allowances. So everybody who's out there emitting those greenhouse gases gets allowances for the amount of greenhouse gases they emit.
Mm-hmm.
And so as the cap reduces, they get fewer and fewer allowances. So what they need to do is either reduce their emissions or start buying more allowances from other people who are reducing their emissions. And that's where the trading comes in. So you get basically a market and greenhouse gas reductions. Greenhouse gas reductions become a valuable commodity that you can buy and sell.
It's a market-based solution, really, and of the two that have really been put forward, either cap and trade or just an out-and-out tax on carbon. And, you know, don't be fooled when you hear the wingnuts call this a cap and tax. It ain't. It's cap and trade. So before we go to the break, and then we'll come back and talk about the how cap and trade is just a huge scam, David Roberts, explain to me, when did the conservatives, the so-called conservatives, decide that they don't like cap and trade? Because didn't they used to be in favor of cap and trade for other similar greenhouse gases?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the background here is in the 70s and 80s, the favored environmental regulatory technique was just to go to a plant or a facility or a factory and say, you can emit X amount of this, you have to put X amount of cleaning technology on and clean up X amount, just really what are called command and control regulations, just sort of telling individuals what they have to do.
Out-and-out regulation is what
right.
we used to
and,
do.
And
okay.
So this, and so cap and trade originally came out in around SO2, the ozone-destroying SO2. And the idea was, instead of us telling individual plants what they have to do, let's just set a total limit and then let them figure out the best, fastest way to reduce. So they can either reduce or trade or add new technology or get more efficient, whatever they want to do. So George Bush's father, Bush 1, implemented cap and trade in 1990 around SO2, and it was considered a conservative idea back then. And when did conservatives turn against it? When Democrats adopted it. I mean, it's that simple.
It is indeed. More simple explanations for you with David Roberts of Grist.org after this short break. I'm Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. You can give us a call, 877-520-1150, if you want to get your point in. Much more right after this.
Rewrite the star, electric car, so good so far. Electric car on verdant green, invent a dream. Electric.
There's one set of facts we just discussed.
Yes, please be the new machine. Please. Yes, please. Oh, I cannot wait for my electric car. Should be here any moment. And we can, save the world in the bargain. Sounds good to me. Today, the CBO came out with their report. The Congressional Budget Office came out with their report on the Kerry Lieberman climate bill and found that it will cut the deficit by $19 billion. Well, sounds like another reason for the Republicans to be against it. We are speaking with David Roberts of Grist, grist.org. You can follow him on Twitter, and I recommend it, at drgrist. And you can call us at 877-520-1150, because guess what, guys? We're about to talk about cap and trade and what a scam it is and how it's all meant to make Al Gore rich. And I don't know, the Jews are probably behind it too. Anyway, hey David, so the conservatives, so-called conservatives, used to like cap and trade as a solution, as a market-based solution to these issues, but not so much anymore now that the Democrats also seem to be embracing these ideas.
Well, let's clarify something. Back when George Bush's dad was president,
right,
Republicans still included some people who were genuine philosophical pro-market small government conservatives. And from that perspective, cap and trade makes perfect sense. But the Republican Party has devolved into basically the one core position that they all share now is they're opposed to raising revenue by any means.
Mm-hmm.
Call it a tax, call it whatever you want. They're just opposed to raising revenue. And this is another way to look at cap and trade is you have all these energy programs you want to implement. You want to incentivize electric cars. You want to build nuclear plants. You want to build wind turbines, whatever you want. All that stuff costs money. The cap and trade program is how you raise that money to spend on all the goodies you want. And Republicans are just opposed to raising money. That's it. They want to cut taxes. They don't want to raise money. That's what they've come to.
Well, and now in this case, you got the Congressional Budget Office saying it's going to cut the deficit by $19 billion.
Exactly. It raises more revenue than it spends.
Do the Republicans have an alternative? We know they're against the carbon tax. We know they're against the cap and trade. And by the way, Desi Doyen puts on my call screener here. She says that it should be called the Make Polluters Pay to Pollute Act.
Yeah, it could have been better branded a long time ago.
Yeah, well, you know, it's Democrats. What do you expect? Well, but do the Republicans actually have something legitimate that they would agree to at this point?
Well, look, I mean, Republicans have a lot of things they would agree to spend money on. They love to spend money just as much as any politician in Washington does. They want to spend a bunch of money on nuclear plants. They want to spend a bunch of money on electric cars. They just don't want to raise the money. They're not they call themselves fiscal conservatives,
yeah,
but there's nothing conservative about this. They want to spend money.
Yep.
They just don't want to raise the money. That's all there is to it.
All right, let me go to a caller. We'll take your calls at 877-520-1150. If you have a question for David Roberts concerning clean energy legislation, cap and trade legislation, or the Make Polluters Pay to Pollute Act, as Desi has now dubbed it, if you have a question, give us a shout. I've got a question about cap and trade, but maybe Hache here in North Carolina has the question I was going to ask. Essentially, and I'll let him ask his, but what I'm curious about is setting aside the wingnuts, setting aside the folks on the right who are just going to say anything they can to block Democrats, and now all of a sudden they're against cap and trade. There are some people who would consider themselves progressive, I suspect, who actually think cap and trade is a scam meant to line the pockets of Al Gore. But before I let you respond, let me see if that's what Hache's thinking is here. Hache, welcome to Mike Malloy program.
Thank you, thank you. Well, first of all, conservatives say they're to the right of Attila the Hun, I am to the left of Mark Twain.
Okay.
So I'm not approaching you as an adversary here, but I'm thinking that cap and trade, as the gentleman just explained it, and as I understood what it was before, but it turns carbon into an investment opportunity, it seems to me, and that's great for people who value money more than, having a planet to spend it on. Because when I listen to scientists about this, they're talking about by the end of the century, this planet will not have ice caps, and I don't see how you stop that by creating a system that makes carbon profitable for anybody. I'm not an anti-Al Gore. I like Al Gore a lot.
So what are you getting at? What is your question or thought here?
Well, the problem that I see with it is that it completely really ignores the idea that we need to somehow shun carbon rather than turning pollution into really investment opportunities for for big companies.
Okay, hang on, Hatchet.
Small companies.
Let me put the let me put this in the form of a question, David Roberts. Does this cap and trade bill, even if it were to pass, and I know they don't like to call it cap and trade anymore in the Senate, does it just prolong the use of greenhouse gases, the use of carbon? Does it not actually limit these gases, as Hatchet says, is the problem here?
I'd say two things in response to that. First, what Hatchet is getting wrong is that it doesn't make carbon an investment opportunity. It makes carbon reduction an investment opportunity. And so there you're harnessing this people's desire for money, which is, whether you approve it or not, a powerful force. You're harnessing that behind carbon reduction. So that's what you get. It's when you reduce carbon that you can make money on it. That's the whole point. You harness the profit motive behind reducing carbon. Now, that said, none of the cap and trade bills that are on the table now are gonna do the job, are gonna reduce emissions as much as scientists say they need to be reduced. But that's not a problem with the structure of the policy. That's just a problem with the political courage of American leaders. I mean, you got to remember the cap is the important environmental part. The cap is set and ratchets down. That's the key environmental part. So you can set the cap at whatever level you want. Right now it's set at an inadequate level, but you know, braver leaders later on down the road can ramp up that cap to something stronger.
Ramp it up or ratchet it down, in
ratchet
fact,
it down,
right?
Maybe.
Does it ever ratchet down to, so is it ever set to ratchet down below the levels that scientists say it needs to be, even eventually?
Well, right now it's set for 80% reduction by 2050, which is on the one hand, inadequate based on the latest science, but on the other hand, that is a huge revolution in the American economy. I mean, you really can't understate the size of the task we're talking about here. So it's incredibly ambitious.
Okay.
Environmentalist complaints are more around the short-term targets. Environmentalists want to get started faster and ramp up quicker. And, of course, you know, there's lots of vested interests in the U.S. that want to slow walk this thing as long as they can.
Hatchet, does that answer your question or concern here?
Not particularly, but, I mean, for instance, how do you stop a giant company from simply trading with its subsidiary, from setting up a kind of a shell of a company and, you know, pretending to trade carbon offsets that way?
Well, the point is, the trading, I mean, lots of people have concerns about the integrity of the carbon trading market, and those are perfectly legitimate concerns, but they're economic concerns. They're not environmental concerns. The environmental work is done by the cap. There's going to be fewer and fewer of these allowances available. So no matter how people are trading them or moving them around or playing shell games with them, the fact that underlying all that is that there's fewer and fewer of them available as the cap declines. So you have to keep the environmental concerns and the economic concerns separate. Those economic concerns are real concerns, and they're legitimate concerns, but the cap is what's doing the environmental work.
Got it, Hatchet?
Got it.
Thank you, brother. I do appreciate your call. Excuse me. 877-520-1150. And of course, Hatchet wasn't the call that I was hoping for. What I want to hear from... And you know what I'm talking about, right? I want to hear from the Alex Jones fans out there, you know, the folks that have figured out, who have gotten broken away, scraped away the veneer to realize the grifters behind this entire scam and how it's Al Gore and Rahm Emanuel who have been, preparing to line their pockets. In lieu of someone calling and having the courage to ask that question, we have other questions, but that's the one that I want to know. I'll just go ahead and ask you, what do you say to those folks who present you with that, with the whole, it's a huge scam thing? And then that's setting aside the greenhouse gases and those concerns, but just the whole cap and trade scheme.
Well, imagine, if you will, that you are an ex vice president, an ex-presidential candidate with access to virtually every famous person and every rich person on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking, how could I get rich fast? What's the fastest point from A to B? I know. I'm going to engineer a global scientific conspiracy. Then I'm going to engineer an incredibly difficult to pass policy. And when it finally passes, then I'm going to get involved in a company that's going to take part in the market created by that policy. I know these people have a low opinion of Al Gore, but surely, no matter what you think of him, he could think of easier ways to get rich than that.
Well, you're right. Let's see if, Gene has a question from San Francisco. Gene, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Oh, do I have her? Oh, I can't get her because there we go. Gene, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hi, Brad and guest. I'm looking at an article.
It's not just guest. It's David Roberts from Grist.
Mr. David Roberts.
Yes.
I'm looking at a Delta Farm Press article that says the carbon market is in disarray, that the farmers are only getting 10 cents on a dollar return, that they planted trees as they've been told that it would work. They're going into no-till farming, but they're losing money. It doesn't look like any more farmers are going to do this if it doesn't work.
Thanks, Gene.
Well, we need to keep a couple of things distinct here. There's a carbon market that would be created by a cap-and-trade
mm-hmm.
system, and that would be trade in government-issued allowances. There's also already existing right now this separate market in voluntary carbon reductions, and this is the carbon offset market. These are the sort of offsets you can buy when you, you know, fly somewhere or,
mm-hmm.
or buy a TerraPass sticker for your car or whatever. There's a fairly healthy trade market in the U.S. for these voluntary carbon credits, and that market is still young, so there's still a lot of people trying to figure out what are the standards, what kind of projects qualify, how much do they qualify, what are the sort of quality control mechanisms, and there's inevitably a lot of fumbling about, and nowhere is it fuzzier than when it comes to agriculture, because as you can imagine, you can say, well, I can reduce carbon by X amount by planting a bunch of trees, even though the carbon won't actually be reduced for whatever 50 years
mm-hmm.
until the trees grow up. It gets hard to measure those things, and so there's been a lot of confusion and fumbling around, and there's just a lot of confusion because they don't know if the U.S. is going to pass a cap and trade bill, which would at that point sort of swallow that market into the larger market. So it's just a young, immature market, and there's going to be lots of flailing around and probably lots of shenanigans at the beginning until there are some set rules of the road.
David Roberts joins us from grist.org. We'll be back with much more and your calls at 877-520-1150. It looks like we've got some cap and trade opposers on the line. We'll get to that and the status of climate change legislation. Will it ever pass? Brad on Malloy.
Can't see the forest for the trees. Cover up your lies with sympathy.
Is high indeed and getting higher, I'm afraid. We are speaking with David Roberts of grist.org. Check him out at grist.org, of course, and also via the Twitters at Dr. Grist, or as we like to call him, Dr. Grist. I got a couple of callers who are post cap and trade, but I'm going to get to all you guys there, but very quickly. You are our go-to guy on where the hell this clean legislation is. Harry Reid recently said, sorta, kinda, that he was going to get this back on the table, maybe on the floor of the Senate. What's the status at this point, David Roberts?
Well, the status is there are a bunch of bills that have been put forward by various senators. One of them is the one from Kerry and Lieberman, the main one everybody knows. There's one from Cantwell and Collins. There's energy bills from Bingaman, Merkley. There's a bunch of bills out there.
Mm-hmm.
So what Reid is going to do is huddle with his advisors, maybe some committee chairman, and figure out some sort of floor strategy and cobble together a bill from pieces of all those legislation. And the big question, of course, is whether a price on carbon is going going to make it to the final bill, and honestly, it looks like probably not. So we may be having this argument for no reason.
Really? So we're looking at there'll be a renewable energy and all that stuff. But
yeah, there'll be some renewable energy incentives. There'll be some incentives for nuclear. There'll be some efficiency stuff, some electric car stuff. And then I think what will happen is the price on carbon, some sort of cap and trade system, maybe a limited cap and trade system only for electric utilities, will be an amendment that will come up for a separate vote, because everybody in the Senate wants a vote specifically on that. And so the question is whether that piece can get to 60. Some bill will pass. Some energy bill will pass. The question is whether it will also be a climate bill.
And just how much it's going to have for nuclear energy, how much it's going to have for offshore drilling. Are they still? Are you hearing that they're still going to move forward with offshore drilling?
Well, they're all still in love with nuclear. I think they're going to steer clear of the offshore drilling now, since the core of the bill really is going to be measures involving addressing BP and offshore drilling safety and all stuff like that. So I really don't think they're going to go gung-ho on more offshore drilling. I think it's mostly going to be standards and things like that around offshore drilling.
Yeah, and you know what really just pisses me off, Dave, is that everybody here, you know, they're now saying, well, we have to be careful about offshore drilling because, as we have now learned, we don't know how to clean it up in the worst-case scenario. But so let's do nuclear instead. I mean...
You think we learned a lesson about risk?
Yes.
Take different risks.
It's insane. I know. We, you know, if nuke goes wrong, we obviously we don't know how to clean that up. What the hell are we thinking here?
Well,
what are these people
thinking? There's also a lesson here about climate change. I mean, what if climate change is worse than we think? We flip over some tipping point. There's no going back. I mean, the oil spill should be a lesson about risk, things that can't be undone.
Right.
How much of a risk do you want to run to risk something that you can't undo if you do it?
Because, as actually Des types in here onto my screen her question, you know, will the bill be enough to save our asses from climate change? You know, I guess unless you don't think it exists, so it doesn't matter. But, you know, well, this bill won't even address that by the time he cobbles it together, correct?
It's unlikely to substantially reduce emissions,
David, I leave it to you. If you want to hang over, I do have these callers here. I wasn't able to get to them. I will take the calls no matter what. But, David, you want to stick around,
sure,
for the quick questions? And then on anything you want to talk about above and beyond this, anything you want to talk about in the day's news or your opinion, it is your media. Use it or lose it. 877-520-1150. David Roberts from grist.org sticks with us for one more segment and a couple of your calls. Anything else you want to get in on, do it now. These are your public airwaves for now anyway. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Be back in a sec.